have a repeat offender on the Big App show today, and I say that with kindness and love. The hottest player in the league, ladies and gentlemen, Annie Duke is back with us.
Hi.
This time not for your app, which was...
No.
You were actually the first guest on the Big App show.
Really?
I think you were the very first guest.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. And now,
I like it.
And now you're back, and now we're doing books, which
yes.
is great. And I'm so happy to see you come up the hill again.
Yes, because I live literally across. I had to be here. I left 4 minutes before I had
to be here.
So.
Of course. Yeah, no, this is my neighborhood outreach program. It's like,
right.
you know, I can't get anyone to come over unless, I got a show, you know, come over now.
I had to cross the 101 to get here.
Whoa. Yeah, big news. So, well, before we talk about your latest book,
yes.
how are you doing?
I actually... Pretty well. I've been busy. I started this new company with some people.
Tell me about
this. Well, we started a new... poker has never had any kind of professionalized version of the sport, which I know sounds weird because people have been watching poker on TV for
like... Well, isn't poker just like you brought your revolver and you had your scotch, your bourbon, and you just played and shoot the guy under the table? Isn't that what poker's all about?
Yeah, right.
That's where
it's actually... People actually compete in poker at the elite level, and it's mm-hmm. it's a lot like anything like... anything from tennis or golf to basketball, where you have, like, a lot of people play basketball because there's pickup games or whatever, but
right.
there's only a handful of people that have risen to the elite level of the sport.
Of a real league.
Yeah, yeah, like tennis. My dad's still playing tennis, but he's not Federer, you know,
mm-hmm.
or Nadal. And same thing in golf, right? Like, everybody I know plays golf, but you have this handful of people who've risen to the elite level. And poker's never done anything to sort of separate those people out into their own space.
That's crazy, because I actually, as you know, I know nothing about poker.
Yeah.
You'll remember that from
yeah,
a year ago.
Yeah, I do. Although after you read my book, you will.
Yeah, well, I have some questions about that. But when you watch poker on TV, these people seem pretty professional. You know, it seems like they know what they're doing. And
well, so if you look at something like the World Series of Poker, 8,000 people enter that event.
No.
So you could imagine if 8,000 people entered the U.S. Open golf tournament that you would rarely see like Tiger Woods make it to the end because there'd be too many scratch golfers who would just sort of shoot the game of their life. Right,
right.
And it's like that in poker. So what happens is that the people who get there are often quite good, but they're not professionals. They're not the name brands
mm-hmm.
that you know. And so what we've done as a company is that we've created objective qualification standards like you would in any other
So what does that mean? You have to win X number of events?
Yeah, you have to. There's a certain amount of lifetime earnings you have to have gathered.
What's the cutoff?
Well, the cutoff is $1.25 million in lifetime earnings.
Ooh.
But also you have to have had a lot of recent success. So it's a combination of consistency over time with mm-hmm. performance now.
So you have like a board that determines if someone's eligible. So if they have like $1.1 million, but they've been doing really good?
No,
it's
they're
really
actually,
cut off?
Yeah, we actually just mm-hmm. scrape a database. So there is no, there's no picking and choosing. So the minimum cutoff is $1.25 million lifetime earnings, but you have to have earned $600,000 in the last 3 years.
Wow, okay.
Had a good result in 9 different tournaments. So, and the top tier, over $4 million in lifetime earnings, also $600,000 in the last 3 years, and you have to have 3 major titles in order to get the top level.
So I guess I would presume the point of federating something like this or
yes.
making it into a league
yes.
is for television rights?
Yes.
Or,
yes. Right. So you'll start seeing it on TV this fall.
You get signed deals? You're done?
We are completing, so I can't tell you who it is.
That's okay. Network, well, congratulations.
So. Yeah.
That's great. A real network?
Yeah.
Like with three letters?
You have 3 letters.
Oh, you go. That's awesome.
Wait, doesn't like TBS have 3 letters?
It's okay. TBS is our
it's
a real network.
It's a real network, and we'll be announcing that in June. And it's just been going really well. And we're going to also be announcing a social media game as well. So we're very excited, and it's going really well. The pros have been very excited about it. As a company, we're adding a lot of money to the prize pools, and we're not charging them fees to play, which is something that
that's a big deal, I guess. Yeah.
Well, because if you enter most of the tournaments that people see the poker players playing on TV, they've actually paid up to a 10% fee
mm-hmm.
of the total buy-in
oh,
to play.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so up to 10%. So it depends on the tournament. It's usually, if you enter a $10,000 tournament, it would be somewhere between $600 and $1,000 that you would pay just to be able to play. That doesn't come back to the players. We've waived all those fees. And across the first season, which is 4 tournaments and a championship, we're adding $2.6 million to the prize pool to give back to the players.
Now, have you been playing yourself recently? You've been raking in some dough?
So, I haven't. This company's really kept me busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, not to be a downer, but I was going to defend my...
Your title.
My title, my national heads up title, and my mom passed away on that
day. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I withdrew, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And then I had another tournament scheduled the next week, which I had to pass on. So between that and the company, I actually haven't been able to play this year, but really loving what we're creating. So, mm-hmm.
Well, welcome to entrepreneurship, and I wish you many employees. It's a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. We're still small.
It's the beginning of all. You thought you got headaches playing the game. Wait until you start really run a company.
Well, so far we have only great people working for us. We're small enough that we get to, you know, have the no asshole test.
So miss all of this though.
Yes.
You release another book. How many books have you done so far?
This is my second.
I thought you had like three or four.
No, this is my second. I'm actually writing my third right now, somewhere in my free time, if it is.
Decide to play great poker, which immediately draws my eye. I'm like, okay, this is good. And then there's a little subtitle here: a strategy guide to no limit Texas Hold'em.
Yes.
So here's a question for you.
Sure.
I get invited to poker games all the time.
Right.
And in Los Angeles, there's these little cliques of, like, actors and movie stars. And they say, oh, you should come over. And I've always learned, if you don't know who the patsy is, you're it.
That's true.
So, and I'm like, I got something else to do that day or whatever. Could I read this book and actually go in and win something? Could I not be the patsy at least?
For sure. This book is actually an interesting book because it's about... It's a different approach than other poker books take. Other poker books basically either they give you some really simple rules, which will only work some of the time, or they just give you a lot of different examples of hands.
Right.
And then you're supposed to read these examples
of hands. My eyes gloss
somehow,
over. Yeah,
right. Like, and I look at those and I'm like, what does this have to do with that? what this is, it's a guide. The reason why Decide is in the... in the title is that it's a decision-making approach. So it basically says, understand what the problem is or the goal is at any time that you are at the table, and then figure out how to solve that problem conceptually. So the first part of the book is pre-flop decision-making, and it just says, why are you doing what you're doing at the table? So it's actually really good for beginners, but it's also really good for much farther along late intermediate players because it's a novel approach to how to think about it. So as an example... other books will tell you, if you're the first player in, you should raise, and you should raise three times the big blind. And they don't really give you an explanation of why that is. And what I say instead is, I'm not going to tell you whether to raise or not, because that's your business. Mm. Honestly, I don't know what table you're at. Right? Because when you go and play in one of your Hollywood games with your buddies, that's a really different game than if you're playing at the Commerce Casino here in Commerce, California, right? Where there's people with sunglasses and hats, and they're all taking
Oh, no, the Hollywood types, they do the same thing with the sunglasses and the hats.
Like, it depends.
Really?
You know, and I always say, like, I don't know if the people at your table are drunk. I don't know if they've had a bad day. Like,
right,
I don't know any
of
stuff. And it really affects your decision-making. So instead, what I do is, instead of telling you to raise, I tell you why raising is useful.
Okay.
What is useful about raising? So, as an example, one of the really useful things about raising is that it's a way to get you against one opponent. And it just turns out that any hand that you play in the game really likes to be against one player and doesn't like to have lots of people in the pot, right? So that's there's three different main reasons, but that's one of the reasons. I like to be against one guy. So what I say to you is, okay, if raising is really good for getting you against one guy and there's all these advantages of being against one guy, then you should raise if your raising makes it so you only have one guy against you.
Right.
And that's not like, I know it sounds like solipsistic, but it's not, because sometimes you're in a game with people who just like to play, or they're drunk, or whatever, and if you raise, seven people at the table call you.
You realize you lost me at flop, right?
Yeah. Well, the flop is, right. So the flop is the three cards that come down in the middle. But the thing is that what will happen is, like, sometimes you're in these games and you'll raise, and the people just don't care because they're just there to gamble.
Yeah.
And so four people will come in and play with you. They'll be like, oh, okay, great, I want to play my hand. Whereas you'll be in other games where you'll raise and only one guy will play with you.
Right.
And so by understanding what raising is good for, what you understand is that just because someone told you to raise once doesn't make it good. You should raise when the raising makes it so that one guy's in the hand with you. But if you're in the kind of game where when you raise, four guys are in the hand with you, maybe you shouldn't
raise. Maybe you should not raise, right.
Yeah.
Why is it that Texas Hold'em became so popular? I mean, there's so many different versions of poker.
Yeah, there are.
I mean, that's all you ever see anymore is Texas Hold'em.
It's a television thing, actually.
Because it's more exciting to watch?
It's not that it's more exciting to watch. It's more simple to understand.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not dumb, Annie, but I look at this and I'm like, no, I really don't understand.
Well, so to give you a comparison, so in Texas Hold'em, you only get two cards.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your two cards.
Right.
And then eventually there's five cards in the middle.
Right.
And everybody can use those.
Mm-hmm.
And then you figure out what the best five card combination of those seven cards is, right? So that's pretty
simple. I've kind of figured that part out, yeah.
Right. So that's pretty simple rules. And then the other rules about it are you can bet as much as you want at any time.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can explain that.
That makes it exciting.
Right.
Right.
If I try to explain Omaha to you, okay, you get four cards, and then the same five cards come down in the middle, but you can only bet as much money as in the pot. You can't actually bet your whole stack. And you can't use any combination of your four cards and the five in the middle. You have to use exactly two cards from your hand.
I'm watching golf.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is a very simple game to explain.
Got it.
But it's so, I mean, I wrote 460 pages on it. It's obviously very deeply layered. And that's the best kind of thing to
watch. Well, but you're also, your mind is like, you're like a genius. You're a certified genius. You have this, like, mathematical approach to everything that is mind-numbing.
It's the same thing as other sports on TV. It's like,
like Jeopardy?
Well, no, what I'm saying is, like, if someone sits down and they want to watch basketball, right, and they've never seen basketball before, I can explain the game to them in 2 seconds.
Right, yeah.
But what's going on once you get to know what
nuances.
Basketball is
yeah.
about, there's
yeah, right.
so many nuances.
Drawing fouls and all that,
right.
yeah. right.
And it becomes very complex, you know. Mm. I can sit and watch football and I can understand, okay, the goal is for that guy to get the ball down there,
right.
and he has to always move it forward, right? And he gets four tries to get 10 yards. That's pretty much it. But then you start getting into what's the formation.
You're such an awesome woman. You know all this stuff. It's like, I know you have a fiance, but you got to watch out. Guys are like, yeah, I like her.
But I remember when I first started getting into football, and then all of a sudden I was like, oh, what is the secondary doing? You know,
and
then you start getting into it, and poker's like that. This particular game, Hold'em, is like that. I can explain to you in a sec, but you could watch it forever.
Speaking about your mind, I may have asked this last time you were here. Do you do, because, you know, it's your brain that's doing all this. How do you train it? Is it just playing the game, or do you eat certain foods, or do you do certain exercises?
First of all, I believe that there's a big connection between the health of your mind. So I work out every day and I'm a vegan.
You're vegan. I remember that, yeah.
Not every poker player follows that, but
You know, the soy stuff is, you know, the genetically modified soy makes your brain, like, shrink and stuff.
I don't eat soy.
Okay, good, good.
So, I don't eat any processed foods. I don't eat soy.
Right.
But I live in L.A., so don't feel bad for me.
We need to do vegan poker playing.
That's what we need to know.
This is an exciting new opportunity.
Now, so the other thing that really keeps you in shape in poker, I think, is outside of just playing, and it's important to keep playing, is engaging in the learning process and continuing to do that for your whole life. And you can do that either by talking to other really amazing players and talking through hands and deconstructing hands and that kind of thing. Or I find by teaching, actually, that... that really sharpens me up, because if you can't explain it to someone coherently, then you probably don't understand it yourself.
Right.
But one of the things I talk about actually at the end of the book, I have some more sort of life management stuff in there.
Hmm.
And one of the things I say is that the day that you think you understand the game is the day you should quit, because it's not a solvable game. And that means that you're not, you know, engaging in the learning process, and you shouldn't be dismissing people. The other thing I say is that if you're talking to me about a hand just because you want to tell me about bad luck, it's a really bad use of your time. You should tell me about a hand because you have a question about it.
Right.
Right? And you should ask that of your peers, too. Like, hey, I want to tell you a hand because I want you to tell me if I played well, not because I want to complain. Right? And so that stuff is all in the back of the book, too, about how to stay sharp.
So it must be hard for you, though. You know, like, can you just, like, play a game with anybody to stay sharp and train? I mean, you have to have some level of...
No.
See,
this is the other thing I say. One of the big mistakes that poker players make is that they dismiss people who are worse than they are. And this is true in life as well.
Hmm.
Like, you know, you're sitting in your job and you're like, oh, that guy's an idiot, you know, or whatever. And and dismissing people is a really big mistake, because for two reasons. One is that I guarantee you that everybody on this planet does at least one thing better than you do. Right? Even if you're, like, way smarter than them
Absolutely.
And way more talented than them, they do one thing better than you do. And you should be trying to figure out what that one thing is, because that will be helpful to you to know.
Hmm.
And then the other thing, and this is true anytime you're in a strategic position with someone, whether it's a coworker that you're trying to jockey for position for, like, a promotion for, or whether it's another player at the table, understanding in what way they play badly is actually quite valuable to you.
Of course.
In terms of honing your strategy against that individual or individuals like them. in the future. So if you just dismiss people as, oh, that guy's an idiot or that guy's bad, and think that there's nothing to be learned from that situation, you should quit.
So Kevin Spacey keeps inviting me. I mean, there's got to be a way to kick this guy's ass.
Well, I'm sure. Absolutely.
I'll bring him
in disguise.
Yeah, exactly. I brought my friend along.
Right.
And she's going to help me out just a little bit.
Right, exactly.
That would be funny.
She doesn't know what she's doing. I'll wear like a hooker dress.
Oh, no. Oh, life just gets better.
Yeah, there you go.
So a lot of weird stuff going on with online gambling these
there
days.
There is,
and you've testified in Congress before.
You've
done all kinds of stuff. So what's your take?
Well, first of all, I mean, obviously, I haven't been happy about this particular law, UIGA, for a long time. And I, as you said, I've testified in Congress twice. I've done a lot of lobbying. And I think that what's happened in the online world, and for people who don't know, there was something called Black Friday.
Mm. I didn't know it had a name.
Yes,
right.
It does.
Black
Friday. It happened on Tax Day, actually.
Oh, how convenient.
I know, which was a Friday. And basically, the DOJ came in and indicted the three largest online sites, which made them stop servicing American players. And so Americans right now don't have any real options to play online poker for real money right now. So that was called Black Friday. I think, first of all, that it shows that we really do need regulation in this industry. It's something that Americans clearly want. It was taken away from them. If there really were issues with the companies, and I certainly don't know, I'm not involved with any of them, we just really need regulation. We need to do this in a way where people can safely play and know that their money will be safe. But aside from that, I mean, for me personally, it's really deeply affected me because it's not just the players who are affected. I mean, people sort of immediately started thinking, oh, there's all these players and now they can't play and they can't do their jobs. And if they want to do their jobs, maybe they have to move out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what a horrible choice to have to make to move away from your home in order to be able to work. And isn't that horrible? And I agree. It's really awful. And I've seen the devastation among my peers who really were mainly making their living online, that they're really having to rethink what they do. But beyond that, as with any industry, all these ancillary jobs kind of grew up around
a lot of
industry.
Them, yeah.
So there was the huge
technology, of course.
Technology, media.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of online sites, that were doing news media and tournament coverage and coverage of the sites, and then affiliate sites and things like that. And then the other thing is that there was a tremendous amount of television production. And so all these people who were involved in television production and specifically had specialized in doing poker production really ended up getting kind
shafted.
Of screwed and shafted because that world just completely shrunk.
Right.
So a bunch of the television just got canceled right away because a lot of what was paying for the television were the sponsors.
Of course.
Right. So there's been this very sweeping devastation to that economy.
So what's the industry doing right now? I mean, I haven't really heard much about it.
Well,
because we killed Bin Laden, so we got other stuff to think about.
Well, that's true, by the way. That was very important.
Completely true.
That was very important, if not just to shut up Trump.
I got to tell you, I would have loved to have had him run. It would have been fun.
It would have been hilarious, right?
Yeah. And he might have actually had a chance, We've elected actors before. This could be interesting.
I think that would make me move outside of online poker. The industry, I think, is still... I think that they're, first of all, just trying to sort of process and recover from what happened just 6 weeks ago. It's not very long ago.
No, it's... Yeah.
I think the players are trying to figure out, are they going to stay in the U.S.? Are they going to leave? Obviously, that's an individual choice. People in these other industries are trying to figure out...
What is the government saying? Are they just quiet about it?
No, I mean, the government... The government has negotiated with the sites to allow player funds to be refunded to the Americans, and the sites are working on that.
Cleanup. I mean, how do we move forward?
Well, they're moving forward with the indictments. But there are legislative efforts are now moving forward. And I think in a lot of ways redoubled efforts to really move this forward and to make sure that there's regulation. Because I think that at this point, I think everybody's goal is to bring this back to the U.S. in a regulated way so that the players can continue to play. And that's really what I would just like to see is the players
like
be able to play.
It seems like we just need some kind of certification that, this is the real deal. This is a credible place, that I'm always worried about anything. I mean, I know how computers work. I'm like, I'm not going to play against something with a computer in the middle. I mean, who the hell knows?
Well, it was always a real deal before, and I think the players knew that. It was that the companies, they couldn't regulate the companies because of this UIGA law. And,
UIGA, what is that?
So it was the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act. And basically what it said is that it was illegal to process transactions for any illegal gaming activity online. The problem with the law was that the government didn't define what an illegal activity was or wasn't, and depending on what statute you look at in what state.
Whose law was that? Whose bill was that initially?
A guy named Bill Frist. You might remember him from looking at the video of Terri Schiavo and saying, well, she's definitely not brain dead, because I can see that on the video. So basically, they didn't define what an illegal activity was, which put the companies in a really weird spot, because now they sort of were looking at the statutes of each state, because this is something that's handled state by state, and sort of trying to figure out like what.
Then you get interstate commerce and all that stuff. It's crazy, you know.
So it's confusing.
So we screw these guys, an entire industry, yet Wall Street is just like walking around.
Well, that's
around,
a weird thing, you know.
That
I mean,
pisses me off.
I'm waiting for. Literally, I set my bars low. I want one indictment. For the banking industry.
One would be nice.
Just one.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Yeah, good luck.
Only one.
Good luck with that.
I'm not asking for much. There were a lot of bad dudes there. Just one.
Well, they found that Raj guy, you know, and got him on insider trading and stuff. So he'll be kind of the poster child.
He'll be the poster guy, I guess. Have you seen the documentary Inside Job?
Of course.
Job? By the way,
of course.
So good, right? A little scary.
It was, it's pretty much right on.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
It really is. There's a couple other kind of underground documentaries that take it even further. And I like, you know, that he said that at the Academy Awards, and everyone went, there's Angelina.
There's another documentary, by the way, that's really good, that I think allows people to understand a little bit how something like that happens, which is called The Corporation.
And of course,
you've seen it?
Yes, of course.
It's so good. It just goes through the history of what kind of rights corporations.
Well, there's also, what was the one with Matt Damon, the Arthur Daniel Midland's scandal? I'm blanking on
right,
the
I
informant.
Know
the informant.
Yes, the informant.
That also shows you kind of what corporations
do. Right, yeah. So that's, it's all very...
And all we want to do is just play poker.
We just
want to play a little bit of poker.
Well, it's one of these things where...
But people don't think about, as you said, the industries around
it's
quite
big. No, it's a huge
big.
Industry.
Yeah.
It was a huge economy, and it was a really devastating effect. And, and for me, in the end, you know, I'd like to say, you know, Ronald Reagan said... That, you know, governments should interfere, you know, as little with people's lives as possible. I think people forget that a Republican said that. But our founding documents clearly state that if you're doing no direct harm, that the government's supposed to stay out of it.
Absolutely.
And there's no question that it says that. And, you know, the kind of direct harm that they try to argue for something like gambling. And poker's not gambling, which is a whole other issue. But gambling in general is, you know, oh, well, you know, I knew this guy. He lost his house. You know,
right.
And it's like, but that's not direct harm, right? Direct harm.
I know a lot of people who got loans from companies and lost
their house.
Right.
exactly. You know, and the thing is that there is no direct harm, and it's adults taking their own money and using it for what they want to use it for. And the interesting thing is that the average person who gambles online loses $10 a week. Hmm. That's what they banned. The $10 a week loss.
I can handle that.
You can handle the $10 a week.
I don't think that the Kevin Spacey game is going to give me a $10 loss.
I can't even go to the Arclight for $10. So.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't even get to a movie for $10.
No, it's like you take a date and it's $50 once you get the popcorn and a drink. It's outlandish.
And poker in particular, by the way, because it's a game of skill and it's so thoughtful, there's so many studies that show that it keeps you cognitively sharp. It keeps
you
younger.
No, it's a brain game.
Longer.
It's a brain game, absolutely.
And that kind of activity is really, really important. And poker is just a great activity like that because it's not a solvable game.
It should be a class in school, I tell you. Grade school kids.
I think in some colleges they teach.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes total sense.
I taught a class at Stanford 2 weeks ago, actually.
Oh, yeah. You said you're so amazing.
Decision-making.
Yeah. Well, decision-making is where you came from, right?
This is. Yes, it is. So, I was teaching. When I was talking at Stanford, I was talking about some bet sizing issues.
Hmm.
That there's some very interesting things that you learn from how to size bets in poker that apply out really well in life. And basically, the very short story is, in poker you learn that you always want to make the smallest bet that will accomplish your goal.
Because
normally you want your opponent to fold, so you want to make these small bets. I won't go into why, it's actually in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But in life, you make bets all the time, too. They're called ultimatums.
Right.
So you do this or else.
Weren't you at one point also doing consulting for companies? Helping them in decision making.
A little bit, yeah.
Executives. Yeah.
Yeah. And I still do a little of that. So what I tell people is that what most people do, and you've seen this because you're a parent, is they're like, If you don't do that, you're grounded for 2 months. Like, they think of the biggest
possible thing. Oh, yeah, that's right.
That you can never follow through with. Yeah. And I say you should actually apply the poker principle and think about what I always try to think about with my kids is what's the smallest thing that would matter to this child?
That would make them fold on whatever stupidity they're getting into.
Yeah, and you think of the smallest thing, not the biggest thing. But most people think of the biggest thing.
Your next book should totally be a parenting book with poker background.
I
love it. Well, okay, so Decide to Play Great Poker, Strategy Guide to No Limit Texas Hold'em. John Voorhaus was your co-writer on this?
He was. He actually has written a lot of sort of low-limit poker advice books.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a sitcom writer. He goes around the world and does consults for, like, when we're developing sitcoms in other countries and things like that.
Oh, really?
He's written two amazing novels. His latest is called The Albuquerque Turkey. You can find that on
Amazon
as well.
Come by. I'll be happy.
Recommend him. And he's really amazing, and he's an incredible writer. And what I was looking for was someone who understood poker enough, and he understood understands poker quite well, so I actually overshot that, who could take these. It's a dense book, and I wanted it to be a very readable book. And I know that I'm not talented enough to make it incredibly readable. So he took these concepts and made them really just really easy to read and digestible, and this book would never have happened without him.
So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to read it. I try to read all the books. This is one of the few interviews where I couldn't really. I mean, I got a PDF, but it's hard to read a PDF.
No, I know.
My eyes start to hurt.
And it's dense.
I'm going to read this book. I'm going to go to the celebrity Kevin Spacey thing. And when I win, I'm taking out the dinner.
Okay, that's fair. I will tell you, I did, as I was sort of finishing up the book, so I finally finished the book in February. This was 2 years in the writing, because, again, it's pretty dense, and it's a lot of poker theory, and I put a lot of work into it. I did give it to a very good friend of mine who's a poker aficionado. I would call him the front edge of intermediate.
Mm-hmm.
But he really loves the game. He just doesn't get to play a lot. And I gave him the book to read, because I just wanted the opinion of someone who I really considered my audience, you know,
mm-hmm.
someone who I would just say is just intermediate. So really perfect target audience. And he won $10,000 in a month after reading my book. That's a true story.
I'm already excited.
I know.
But just enough for one dinner would be fine.
I'll take the dinner.
Okay, good.
He paid for the last dinner we went to, by the way. I tried to pay, and he said, No. You've made me all this money.
Exactly.
And he carries around, because he obviously just got a PDF as well. He carries it around. He's got a deck. Because I can't wait to get the actual book. So
perfect.
I'm not carrying around this stack of paper.
So Decide to Play Great Poker. You know how to get the book.
Right.
All you have to do is tap on the blue button right above us. When the video ends, it'll take you right into Amazon. You can pick it up from there. Annie, thanks again for coming by.
Thank you.
See you soon for the dinner.
Yeah, and also when my next book comes out.
Always welcome. You know that.
Yes.
Okay.